Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This week on Dear Science, I was wondering when that sting was going to stop. I was like, oh my goodness, it just keeps going on and on.
That was a long intro.
I know, I was like, wow, is it usually this long? I've never noticed this before. This week on Dear Science, we are joined once again by our expert, Dr. Alan Blackman. How are you doing today?
I'm enjoying the wonderful weather.
I'm also enjoying the wonderful weather.
It's all good. This can stay until about mid-March, late March.
Yes. Hopefully. Please. Fingers crossed. Hopefully it gets a little bit warmer as well.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But I'm suffering in my sweater because I am not liking my shirt that I wore this morning. So I'm deciding to just wear this instead. What do we have on Dear Science today, Alan?
Well, here we are today on Earth, enjoying a lovely day. We're going to segue perfectly to Uranus.
Ooh, okay.
The most snicker-worthy of planets.
Ooh, yes. You got a snicker out of Athena just then?
And let's talk about what we know about Uranus. Mm. And the thing is that pretty much most of what we know about Uranus is... comes from the fact...
I'm just going to turn Athena's mic off at this point.
Comes from the fact that we've only visited it once.
Right.
Okay? And that was a probe called Voyager 2.
Mm.
And this was 1986, which is more than a few years ago.
Just
now.
A couple, yeah.
I know. And it took 9 years to get there. So,
really?
You know, the solar system is not a small place.
Yeah.
So, 9 years to get there. And... what did we know about it before? We, you know, you could just see it through telescopes in those days. You didn't have your Hubbles and things like that.
Yep.
So it was a sort of a blurry blotch.
Yep.
And this Voyager 2 probe flew past. What we did know was that it was weird because most of the other planets sort of rotate in a vertical direction or about a vertical axis.
Mm.
And Uranus goes around a horizontal axis. So it rotates sort of at 90 degrees to all the other planets. So
interesting.
That makes it a little bit weird.
Yeah. What the hell, Uranus?
I know. And so what did Voyager 2 find? Well, the first and most important things, well, we sort of thought that Saturn was the only planet in the solar system that had rings, but Uranus had two rings, so that was found by this space probe, and also 10 new moons. Okay, so
10,
I know.
10 new moons? How many moons did it have before?
It had five before.
Five moons, that's greedy.
So they found 10 new ones. Now, and they had a whole lot of scientific instruments on board this thing, and it was busy doing its scientific-y thing and everything. They were particularly interested in looking at the magnetic field of Uranus, as they were in all planets, because all planets have their own magnetic field, and a thing called the magnetosphere.
What is the magnetosphere?
So this is sort of the effect, I guess, of the magnetic field, and it sort of forms this big shield against sort of nasty solar particles coming from the sun, all these high-energy particles and stuff like that, without which we'd be pretty much fried, literally.
Lovely.
And so what they found about Uranus was that they had these huge, big radiation belts in the magnetosphere.
Mm.
Very, very, very intense. And this wasn't expected because these things sort of went as the size of the planet. So the biggest planets had the biggest radiation belt, blah, 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 blah. But these ones were found to be ridiculously large, second only to Jupiter. So that was a big, a very, very big surprise.
Mm.
And normally these, the energy for these radiation belts come from things called plasma.
Mm.
Okay. And they looked for plasma and they couldn't find any
in
Uranus. So, and the other thing also, Uranus has got five quite large moons. Okay, and what you should see from these moons are water ions. So these are charged particles of water. Okay, so basically water with a charge that comes from these moons. And, you know, similar moons and all of the other planets do this sort of thing. But this wasn't spotted in the visit to Uranus. Okay, and so therefore, you know, after looking at all of these data of years and years and years, they basically came to the conclusion that Uranus is weird. Okay,
yep.
That it's totally unlike all of the other planets around. Now, let's fast forward about, nearly 40 years, which is scary because I remember this. And And so some workers in the States and the UK and Germany thought, well, let's go back and have a look at these data because, you know, this really doesn't make sense. Why is Uranus the anomaly, you know?
Yeah.
What's going on here? So they decided to relook at all of the data in concert with what was happening in the solar system at that particular time.
Mm.
And basically what they found was that they visited on the wrong day.
Really? They visited on the wrong day.
That's basically it. They got it on the wrong day.
So,
okay.
Like, years of research. Like 40 years of research.
Yep.
Solely. Wow, okay.
So what they found was, looking back at the records, they found that there was a big old solar wind at that particular time. Okay, so solar wind is all, you know, these intense charged particles, emanating from the sun. And basically about 4 days before the spacecraft came into contact with Uranus, the solar wind hit.
Right.
And that has the effect, well, that does affect the magnetosphere, and it affects it very, very massively.
Mm.
And basically, what they are now saying probably happened was that the solar wind had compressed the magnetosphere, squished it in, which led to these particular observations that they're seeing, that these anomalous observations.
Mm.
And it was all because of the fact that, look, had they got there 5 days sooner, they wouldn't have seen all of these weird things.
True.
Okay. And so, basically, what, you know, the situation as it was when the spacecraft flew past occurs about 4% of the time.
Really?
Okay, so basically, they chose the wrong.
Of lucky in a way, maybe?
Well, very, very unlucky, I guess. And so now what they're going to do is to try and sort of reinterpret all of those data with hindsight of what was actually going on at the time and hopefully show that, you know, that Uranus is not the anomalous planet as has been thought to be over the last about 40-odd years. So,
interesting.
So that's kind of interesting. And again, there was another very similar sort of thing. So Neptune, we talked about this earlier on in the year, that Neptune, you look at photos of Neptune as this bright iridescent blue colour.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody thought, oh, you know, that's, wow, that looks gorgeous. But in fact, those photos that you often see of Uranus that were taken by Voyager 2, they were colour enhanced.
Mm.
And in fact, both Neptune and Uranus are basically about the same colour, sort of pale greeny blue.
Oh, really?
Not this bright iridescent thing.
Right.
These are two sort of corrections, I guess, to the literature that have happened this year.
Interesting.
From Voyager 2 data. There you go.
That sounds huge.
Yeah.
That sounds really big.
So that's kind of cool.
That is very, very cool. Okay. Yeah. And for our next topic. What's going on
there?
Well,
let's talk about the pancreas.
Yes, let's talk about the pancreas.
Let's talk about the pancreas. Let's talk about pancreatic cancer very, very briefly because that's, you know, if somebody, you talk about a pancreas, that's probably the first or second thing you think of. One is probably insulin and the other one is sort of cancer.
Yes.
And, you know, pancreatic cancer, particularly nasty, so it's got a 5-year survival rate of 12%, which is just, you know, ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, there are other, and the other thing is that pancreas is the source of insulin for the body, and insulin keeps all your glucose levels, your sugar levels, you know, at the right values. And so we don't have too much, we don't have too little, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the pancreas is of interest for a variety of reasons. Now, there are these things in the pancreas called insulinomas.
Mm.
Okay, insulinomas. Now, these are tumors.
Yeah.
But they're benign tumors.
Right.
Okay? So we're not talking pancreatic cancer here. We're just talking tumors.
Yeah.
But the problem with these things is that they actually churn out way more insulin than they should do.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. They're little insulin producing machines, basically.
Right. Love that.
And so that means that these push your insulin levels too high.
Yeah.
Which means that your sugar levels then become too low.
Right.
And then you can end up just sort of fainting and stuff like that.
Awesome.
So if you've got these things, you can get these sort of, you know, episodes of fainting and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which obviously you don't want.
Yeah, nah, doesn't sound ideal.
So these insulinomas, so now the problem with them is that they're really small, okay? They're really small and they're difficult to detect.
Right.
Okay, so normally the way they do it at the moment is using PET scans, positron emission tomography. Okay?
Right.
So PET scans. And they're good, but they get them only about 65% of the time.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we would want that closer to 100% somehow.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, once you've found where they are, the surgeon can then go in, get rid of them, excise them, bonf, you're cured.
Yeah.
Okay, so knowing where they are is absolutely vital. You don't want to go into the pancreas and dig around blind because that's just not good.
Yes,
okay?
Of course
you,
not.
You
yeah.
want an exact location of these yep. things. Right, so we need to know exactly where the tumour is. So enter the Gila monster.
The Gila monster.
The Gila monster, okay.
This sounds scary. What is the Gila
the
monster?
Gila monster, okay. So it is a venomous lizard.
Right,
that
right.
lives in the States and Mexico.
Right.
Now, apparently, not too bad because they're very, very sort of docile. They don't sort of attack you. They're very slow moving.
Right, they're very chill.
Okay,
relaxed.
So they don't sort of go attacking and stuff like that.
That's
which is,
good to hear. If I ever go to the United States and I see this monster, I'm like, oh.
Which is a good thing.
Yes.
And somebody, God knows why, for some reason, decided to analyze the saliva of the Gila monsters.
As you do.
And in the saliva of these things, they found a protein called exendin-4. Okay. And this has been used for quite a few years now in treatment of diabetes.
Right.
It's been found to be very, very useful for that.
Mm.
And now the researchers have gone one step further and they're thinking, ooh, hang on. Okay, so diabetes is all about, you know, glucose level, insulin levels, blah, 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 blah. Maybe we might be able to use this for these insulinomas. So what the researchers did was took this protein, this exendin-4, and label it with a radioactive isotope.
Right.
Which, if anybody's interested, is gallium-68. So
right.
there you go.
Yep, yep.
And what they found was that this then localized beautifully in these insulinomas, and now they're up to a 95% success rate by using protein. So just basically, you know, sticking a little label in there, and away they go. So, you know, we're getting our lead from nature on this, which I think is absolutely spectacular.
That is very cool.
You know, there's so much in nature that we just don't know about yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's so vast, it's so broad.
And we can, you know, we can use it to help us. And so this was a study of European scientists, and basically what, you know, they got these 95% success rates. They had 53, I think, cases, and in 7 of those 53 cases, the normal methods that they use, so PET scans, CT scans, MRI scans, didn't show a thing.
Yeah.
In 7 of the cases. But they got picked up by this new labeled protein from the Gila monster.
That's awesome.
So
that's
there you go.
So cool.
There's nature helping us out.
Thank you, nature. Bless you, nature.
Absolutely.
Right. Yes, exactly. And what is our final topic? We're talking about elephants, aren't we?
We are sticking to the nature theme.
Love that.
And there's a lovely video online, if you haven't seen it already, of Mary the elephant.
Mary the elephant.
Mary
I've not heard
elephant.
About Mary the elephant.
Mary the elephant in Berlin Zoo.
Yes.
And Mary the elephant in Berlin Zoo has learned how to wash herself with a hose.
Right.
It's kind of ironic, really, because she's got a bloody great trunk, which sort of does the job you would think.
Yeah, yeah.
But, as I say, watch it on the video. It's absolutely brilliant. There's this hose running in her cage or whatever, and so she just picks it up, and she can wash herself all over with this hose.
That is really sweet.
And, you know, this is obviously sort of not necessarily learned behavior, but this is, you know, this is an animal learning to use a tool to carry out a particular function. And so, you know, the zookeeper saw that, you know, the first time it happened, oh, wow, this is very cool. So they call in a few academics and everything. So, you know, they do the studies and everything, and they're observing Mary, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
Now, Mary has got a, what's a cellmate isn't the right word, but cage mate or something like that. I
that sounds a bit worse.
It doesn't sound good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
But there's another elephant in her enclosure, and this is an elephant called Anchali.
Anchali, yes.
Anchali. Now, Anchali seems to be either the humorous type or the jealous type, and they haven't quite worked out which yet. So whenever Mary starts washing herself with a hose, Anchali starts playing around with that hose and trying to stop the flow of the water.
Interesting.
Okay. And so she'll try and kink the hose so that stops, plays around with it, tries doing all of this. She puts her trunk on it, followed by her whole body.
Interesting.
Okay?
Right.
Just to try and stop the hose, because Mary's obviously having this great time in the shower sort of thing.
Yes, yes.
And so she does this. And as I said, elephants there are trained not to stand on hoses. Hoses are quite common. They're trained not to stand on them. They know that that's naughty. So this Anchali doesn't stand on it, but puts her trunk on it and then followed by her whole body.
That's really funny.
Which is, you know, very, very, very clever. So you've got two elephants here doing, you know, remarkable things. One is basically developing use of a tool, and the other one is either trying to be funny and stopping her using it, or is really, really pissed off because she looks like she's having a good time, and again, trying to stop her using it. So,
yeah.
And this has just been published by a bunch of German researchers, and you know, I think it's wonderful. And
that is very wonderful.
And you know, if you haven't seen it, go and have a look online. The video is great. Mira's just having a great old time, and Aunt Charlie's just
not having as much of a good time.
Not having it. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Alan. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Motat.
Thank you very much. That was Alan. Yeah. Thank you, Motat, as you said, and thank you, Science.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.